Hello, everybody. Welcome to the post game.
Happy to be here, man.
Yeah, me too. Chill vibes to, I think, lead us into this.
That's music riff.
It really hypnotized me a little bit. That finger picking.
I took Ben Burgess to see bluegrass last night, which was pretty fun. I saw that.
There's a little bit of a leftist, all-star leftist something hangout like going that, on.
Yeah. Oh, man. That was awesome. I really liked having Ben Case on the show. I think the study that they did is really worth reading if folks haven't gotten around to it. It's interesting because, you know, I was talking to him before we went live that, like, it's important to recognize that, like, there's a use in ballot initiatives and stuff like that, but they're limited in their ability to build a coalition for, like, the long term. And it's one of those things where, like, you can see something as, like, a tool and utilize it, but you have to know how to use these things so that you don't sort of fall into a trap of fetishizing a tactic over a strategy.
Right. Like, these things are important not so much because they're, like... vehicle to the promised land, but because anybody who's trying to solve these problems that, like, people deal with, particularly working people, is going to come up like, okay, you know, is it a politician? Is it us directly petitioning the government to get a law put on the books? Mm-hmm. That's where you meet people, right? And it's not to glorify the tools that we're able to come up with. It's just like, I love having people there with the right sort of framework mm-hmm. to meet those people.
Exactly. We got some fun stuff. I mean, we'll get to calls and stuff. As folks know, leave us messages at 1-940-289-7234. And you can leave us a question on the Discord by going into the live show Q&A chat room. Oh, no, sorry. Going to the live discussion room and adding mod@MOD. And yeah, we'll be able to take some of those. But before we get there, we have a visit from our illustrious friend, Mr. Jordan B. Peterson, who, by the way, you know how we keep on admitting to folks that, you know, you and I are spending a little bit too much time on the on TikTok these days. Mm-hmm. I've been really interested. My feed's just fucked because I love right wing guys, you know, so it really is just like horrible finance advice. All meat diets, you know, to become a Superman.
Were you familiar with what is it?
Liver King. Yeah. I was definitely
$10,000
worth away of my supplements that I've been buying from him in the
You can't believe it. Come on, say man. It ain't so. Say it ain't so, Liver King.
You know, it's just those guys are so funny because, like, there is a lot of, like, health value in, like, a high protein, high meat diet, you know? Right. Like, I've been on a little bit and I've been getting, you know, pretty good results, I'll say. And, like, you know, like, there's an advantage to it because, like, it fills you up, keeps your muscle going. But all these guys, like, they take it so fucking far. And it's
unhealthy
and insane, you know, to, like, have that be, like, the entirety of your diet, the only thing that you're eating. And, yeah, I mean, I think the funniest thing, just because I just don't share this kind of brain at all, is, like, mm-hmm. Joe Rogan.
Right.
Feeling like extremely vindicated by the revelations. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Joe's whole thing, you know, I don't know. I just don't have that kind of mindset to feel like any pleasure other than just like, oh, that's hilarious that this like grifter got exposed.
Yeah. I mean, the thing to me, it's like, there's no money in being like the guy who's only like 90% in.
Yeah.
On this shit, right? So you have to be ultra. Otherwise, you're there's no marketing. You're just in the wash of everyone. So, like, it's very perverse the way that it'll sort of, like, bounce to the top. Like, the bubbles that hit the lid are going to be, like, very damaged individuals that are taking $10,000 worth of, like, steroids a month.
Oh my, was it that much? I didn't even know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So the funniest thing is, you know, Barstool has this show that they put on Sundays. It's called like Sunday Conversation. I can't remember the comedian who runs it, but it's pretty funny. And he just like gets on characters like that or like sports stars on, and he just fucks with them and asks some sort of crazy questions and stuff.
Yeah.
And he had the Liver King guy on. He's like, have you ever killed a man? And he kept on prodding it. Have you ever killed a man? And the Liver King like looks scared, you know, to answer it. And you're like, oh shit, this will be wild. And he goes, I have. And you're like, holy shit. And then he goes, Brian, which I guess was his former name. Before he took on the ancestor thing. I don't know.
God.
The ancient wisdom or whatever the fuck he calls it. Yeah, pretty damn funny stuff. But wait, the reason I brought this up though, Matt, mm-hmm. is that so I follow these things and I always try to check out the comments just because I find it interesting to see how people react to these things. Jordan Peterson, I think, is actually wearing out his audience a little bit. I'm not predicting the end of Jordan or anything like that. But I've been checking out some of his like, you know, more viral videos lately, and mainly the ones about women, you know, where he does his typical like woman hater stuff, and people are getting pissed. They're like, I liked it when he told me to clean my room, but this stuff about women is bad.
That's what's funny is he got into certain marketing channels that he did not belong. Like he is just a weirdo who is like, women should be put in their place while he wears a fedora. Like that's not me making something up. That's him in like 2012. Mm-hmm. And somehow he became the self-help guy that moms felt comfortable with, but they shouldn't. Yeah, most moms are like, actually, if you get down to the nitty gritty, aren't going to be. And there's certain, it's weird because like, yeah, like he has to go there, but it's bad for his marketing. We'll see how that.
Yeah. And like, I'm not predicting the end, and like the damage is already done, because like for every one of those people, there's another person who like is convinced by his self-help advice to then become like a crazy rightist.
Right.
But it has been sort of interesting to see, you know, to use a term I don't really like the quote unquote normie reaction to Peterson. It's like, I like the self-help stuff, all that kind of thing. The getting worked about women all the time is not very popular. Or as popular as I think he might hope. But not about things that I think are like quite odious when you actually like do some more research and understand these systems. Israel, this conversation with him and Netanyahu is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and it's really annoying to me as somebody who actually believes and is a huge consumer of podcasts and like welcomes the change that's had in spreading ideas throughout the world and actually does like take an interesting long form podcast to see it fetishized by cynical assholes mm-hmm. and used as like a marketing slogan. And here's, you know, Jordan Peterson starts this thing off. He's like, you know, I always love what we've been able to do. And it's like, you're just doing what CNN does for a guy like Benjamin Netanyahu, but like over a course of 90 minutes instead of like 90 seconds, right? Like just a platform to just go off with the things you've been preparing, like your patter. And so here is Jordan Peterson. Remember this name, Theodore Herzl, because it's going to be important when we talk about nationalism. Coming up and how, the way that just to get a little bit of flavor of how this conversation starts.
I'm going to do what I can to my limited ability, let's say, to push back. I've heard the arguments of often young people who are more prone to give credence and sympathy, say, to the Palestinian viewpoint. And I'd like to rectify my ignorance and maybe help my viewers and listeners do the same thing. So would it be useful to start with Herzl?
Well, I'd start, Herzl was what I call our modern Moses, but I'd actually start with the original.
So what we have here is an opportunity, David. Mm-hmm. Our friends over at the American Prestige Podcast, Bessner and Davison, have just finished a series with the author of this book here, Rashid Khalidi, which I'd recommend. I have it on Audible. It's also available on the internet sort of libraries like LibGen. The 100 Years War on Palestine. They did an eight-part series on the history of Palestine. And am I still here? Am I good?
Yeah, you're great. You're okay. Great.
And we'll, let's get into now Bibi as a basically apartheid. Like the what's funny thing about what's funny about this moment right now, and funny I say like grim also, and like just inconsistent, is that the word apartheid is becoming more and more accepted by even mainstream human rights organizations, and that's very difficult. And how do you deal with something like that, Bibi? What Bibi does here, I think, is like, one, it shows his skill as a politician, but it's also, I think, as we'll get to with Rashid Khalidi's book, it's kind of always what Israel's been doing in terms of erasing the indigenous Palestinian population there. Mm-hmm. And basically, what you're going to get here is they weren't a national populace in a way that we needed to respect. And that's synonymous with nobody being there at all. But anyway, enough of my preamble. Here is Bibi talking to Jordan Peterson.
I mean, you said the Arabs came in the 7th century, and that's a long time ago. And so from the 7th century to now, you might think of that as being a time frame long enough to allow for a valid claim of sovereignty ownership. But the Jews' rejoinder is, well, we have a much older claim than that, one that spans 3,500 years. And the problem I have with that conceptually, and then I'll get to some other issues that are relevant to this, is that it's not exactly obvious what time frame of analysis should be primary.
You have a very important
point.
And
I don't really know how to solve that.
I do, yeah, and I'll answer your question. It's a valid question. If the Arabs, having conquered the land in the 7th century and dispossessed the Jews over the next two centuries, the Jewish farmers kicked them out and so on, if they established a viable state, a viable national identity there and so on, you're right. You know, these things happen in history. You're supplanted by another people. Fine. But that's not what happened. The Arab conquerors themselves were replaced by other. First of all, they did nothing with the land. It's just barren. They actually built one town. Mm-hmm. It's called Ramle. That's it. You know, hundreds and hundreds.
So, I mean, there's a little bit of a contradiction here with they did nothing, there's nobody there, but they built one. They only built one town, right? That's, if there's no one there, how could they build something like that? But broadly speaking, anyone familiar with American history should be familiar with the way that we've talked about improvements. We can take this land, we can abrogate this treaty because actually those Native Americans there, they're not really doing anything with it, which is everything we know now, like a very, very mistaken assumption. We've talked about like sort of like forestry and different wildfire management techniques. I mean, just to name one possible thing, which isn't to say like you should buy into this logic at all, that, okay, you're not doing what we like shows up in our economic statistics, so this is ours now. I mean,
no, I mean,
it's persuasive too.
It's a Lockean idea, John Locke,
right?
You know, somebody who's oftentimes positively cited by Americans as, you know, somebody who influenced our legal and political system.
Right.
I mean, this isn't just like a throwaway line, by the way, in Locke. Like, this is like he dedicates a lot of pages and time to this theory of land improvement as like, designating like ownership, who you should think of as like the actual stewards or people who own the land. Yeah.
Sites and hundreds and thousands of new sites that we built. The Arabs built one place, one town called Ramle. That's it. So they did nothing with the land. Then they were replaced by other conquerors. Other conquerors came in. The Mamluks, the Ottomans, ultimately the British, a series of conquerors. In other words, they took over the land, lost the land, and did nothing with the land. So if they had done what you say, if they had created, if that house that we were expelled from was taken over by another people, another family, they built a family there, they had children, grandchildren, they extended the porch, they built a parking garage and so on.
I'll just say, like, this way he's talking about it hypothetical is really sickening. When, you know, like, people actually are thrown out of houses that their generations of ancestors have lived in, and it's like a Lockean thought experiment to Bibi and to the way him, for all Jordan Peterson cares, really.
Still have the ability to demand reclamations, the compensation, and so on. But, you know, tough luck. That happens in history. But that's not what happened. Once the Jews were conquered by the Arabs did nothing with it, lost the land to others. Now we come back and bring it back to life 13 centuries later and perform this miracle. And they fabricate a history where we were there all the time. It was a verdant homeland. It was built up. It was nothing of the kind. It was desert. It was nothing. Now, it's not merely Mark Twain and Arthur Penrhyn Stanley who say that. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of travelogues over the centuries of famous French poets, of Swiss travelers, of German theologians, everybody, of poets, writers, travelers.
Wait, sorry,
who describe exactly the same thing.
But like, not to put on my hyper woke boy hat here, but like, oh, so a bunch of Europeans went to another place in the world and said that it was barbaric and not being improved. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck kind of argument is that?
Exactly. Especially when, as we can, this is what I meant with the opportunity, right? We have the opportunity to see a full spectrum of how you get informed, from the Jordan Peterson, Bibi Netanyahu, to Rashid Khalidi at American Prestige. And yes, this is the history we're getting here. Is Mark Twain was on some fucking pleasure cruise in the Eastern Mediterranean, and he's like, didn't see much going on. So, yeah, you better allow apartheid today. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
That's pretty amazing.
Nothing there. There was no Palestinian state. There were no Palestinians. They didn't even, the Arabs even didn't call themselves that. They were calling themselves parts of southern Syria, whatever. There was no national consciousness. There was nothing to form the consciousness about. In the 20s.
There's no national consciousness. I mean, that's really like, he's beating around the bush and then he just says it there. Like,
and it's for a lot of reasons, is bogus. And I know we have more to sort of break this down in a second, but like, you know, national consciousness was like a project of the 20th century. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is like something that has been built up. I shouldn't even say that. This is too serious for me to just talk about Netflix shows I've been watching. But like, you know, if you look at like throughout history, I mean, you know, the nation state is like, to paraphrase, borrow a term, is like an imagined community, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like a very purposeful project of the 20th century to delineate between different kind of markets and like cultures and borders, a kind of sense of mythology and history that united people across kind of class basis. And it was very much a project of like modern capitalism in particular to make that kind of consciousness appear. So to like, again, I think, you know, there are different ways to take the BB argument, but like on the very explicit one, because he's trying to make it seem like national consciousness in the way that, you know, his right wing party sort of views that thing is some kind of universal category versus a very, very particular one that has its own intentions and reasons for being.
Yeah. And I'll just say, like, David was right to pause and point out, like, why are we referencing Mark Twain when you could, I don't know, reference Theodore Herzl, but we'll get to what Herzl is documented on the record of saying.
Country, the Arab world and the Palestinians and their supporters in the West, among the intellectual elites, basically erased history and recreated a fake history. A fake history that deracinates the Jewish roots that are unparalleled. There is no other story in the history of nations where people fought for so long for their land, for thousands of 2,000 years.
So just to make no mistake that what he's doing is deracinating the indigenous Palestinian claim to the land. And two, this is just basically saying, actually, we can do this because we have the true blood and soil claim to this land, which I think is, you know, yeah, well, we'll get into that in a little bit.
Well, man. Came back to it, did not kick out an existing population with a national consciousness, rebuilt the land, and now are being told you have no connections to it. You were, you know.
Sorry to dwell on that, but you have, what is that? Did not kick out a population with a national consciousness?
That's just, that is pure denial.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can throw out everything that he said at that point when he's denying the Niqab. Yeah.
There is no other story in the history of nations where people fought for so long for their land, for thousands of 2,000 years, were dispossessed from it, came back to it, did not kick out an existing population with a national consciousness, rebuilt the land, and now are being told you have no connections to it. You were, you know, you're the colonials. No, we're not. We're not. We're not just to
This is a very particular point, but I think it like it hits at the lies that Bibi is getting into right now. You know, I've close Palestinian friends, and like, you know, one of the things that they try to do in a area where you might not think about these things is in cuisine. And there is an ongoing project to sort of take Palestinian like recipes and dishes and to say, oh, this is Israeli. There's a lot in New York that do this, right? Places they'll be like, right. Oh, Israeli restaurant. And what they are Palestinian dishes that have then been rebranded as Israeli, even though they were things that were lifted from another culture after expulsion and murder and dispossession of the Palestinian people. And, you know, again, on the long list of crimes, you know, is it the one at the top? But in something that might seem so trivial as that, it shows how deep the cultural genocide is on top of like the actual war with Palestinian people, you know, to try to deny Palestinian their history and then wear it as if it is your own.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Cultural genocide, the cultural component of genocide, basically. Yeah.
Rebuilt the land and now are being told you have no connections to it. You were, you know, you're the colonials. No, we're not. We're not just to give us a fine point, because this is so crucial what we're discussing. And I discuss it at considerable length in my book because people are so ignorant of history. We are not the Belgians in the Congo. We're not the Dutch in Indonesia. Okay? We're not the British in South Africa. We had been there all the time. We had been in the Congo. We had been, if you will, the equivalent in Indonesia. We were kicked out of the Congo and nothing happened in the Congo. Nothing. No other people there, no development, nothing. Okay? Now we come back to our land, build it up, enable immigration from Arabs who are now called Palestinians from neighboring lands, and they tell us, oh, you don't belong here. You dispossessed us. This is essentially what Arab propaganda and Palestinian propaganda has done, and what I labored not only in the present book.
So, yeah, the distinguishing thing between modern Israel and sort of colonialism in the Congo and Indonesia isn't that it's not a racialized apartheid system, dispossessing people, but that they've been there for a long time. So it's there you go.
Yeah, it's
the historical argument is just false on its face. But let's just even drop it and pretend as if, you know, history didn't happen. You know, the things that he's claiming are true. What right do you have to then come today and to throw families out of their homes? What right do you have today to create a racial system where, depending on, you know, how you are designated by the state, you have freedom of movement or you do not? What right do you have to deny people food? What right do you have to not deny people water? What right do you have to tear down and bulldoze over the olive trees? Right? It's just like, even on the level of like, if you accept the preface of Bibi, which is nonsensical, accept it even, you know, just as like a thought experiment, right? Mm-hmm. Accept it even and see if the current actions of the apartheid state Israel are acceptable. And I would challenge anyone with a harder mind to really truly do so.
Yeah. And I just want to share a few sections from this Khalidi book, including on Herzl. Because, you know, Bibi loved to blather about Twain in that interview, but yeah, I think this is a little bit more relevant. Herzl, the acknowledged leader of the Gruen movement he had founded, had paid his sole visit to Palestine in 1898, timing it to coincide with that of the German Kaiser Wilhelm II. He had already begun to give thought to some of the issues involved in the colonization of Palestine, writing in his diary in 1895. We must expropriate gently the private property on the estates assigned to us. We shall try to spirit the penniless population across the border by procuring employment for it in the transit countries while denying it employment in our own country. The property owners will come over to our side. Both the process of expropriation and the removal of the poor must be carried out discreetly and circumspectly. And Khalidi goes into, he's got access to documents from this Yusuf Dia, I believe, because there's a relation. You can read about it in this introduction, but and Yusuf Dia was the mayor of Jerusalem at this time for a decade, among other sort of political and legal positions. And Dia wrote a letter, was familiar with Herzl. He's himself spent time in Europe. And the letter, I'll just read. The letter began with an expression of Yusuf Dia's admiration for Herzl, whom he esteemed as a man, as a writer of talent and as a true Jewish patriot, and his respect for Judaism for the Jews, who he said were our cousins, referring to the patriarch Abraham revered as their common forefather by both Jews and Muslims. He understood the motivations for Zionism, just as he deplored the persecution to which Jews were subject in Europe. In light of this, he wrote, "Zionism in principle was natural, beautiful, and just, and who could contest the rights of the Jews in Palestine? My God, historically, it is your country." This sentence is sometimes cited in isolation from the rest of the letter to represent Yusuf Dia's enthusiastic acceptance of the entire Zionist program in Palestine. However, the former mayor and deputy of Jerusalem went out to warn of the dangers he foresaw as a consequence of the implementation of the Zionist project for a sovereign Jewish state in Palestine. The Zionist idea would sow dissension among Christians, Muslims, and Jews there. And I'll just skip a little bit ahead. Herzl's reply to Yusuf Dia came quickly on March 19th. His letter was probably the first response by a founder of the Zionist movement to a cogent Palestinian objection to its embryonic plans for Palestine. In it, Herzl established what was to become a pattern of dismissing as insignificant the interests and sometimes the very existence of the indigenous population. The Zionist leader simply ignored the letter's basic thesis that Palestine was already inhabited by a population that would not agree to be supplanted. Glossing over the fact that Zionism was ultimately meant to lead to Jewish domination over Palestine, Herzl employed a justification that has been a touchstone for colonists all times and in all places, and that would be a staple argument of the Zionist movement. Jewish immigration would benefit the indigenous people of Palestine. It is their well-being, their individual wealth, which we will increase by bringing in our own. Echoing the language he had used in Der Judenstaat, Herzl added, in allowing immigration to a number of Jews bringing their intelligence, their financial acumen, and their means of enterprise to the country, no one can doubt that the well-being of the entire country would be a happy result. Of course, that's very a racially specific immigration policy. Most of it in the letter addresses a consideration that Yusuf Dia had not even raised. You see, another difficulty, Excellency, in the existence of the non-Jewish population in Palestine. So Mark Twain didn't see it, but Herzl write into it here. You see another difficulty, Excellency, in the existence of the non-Jewish population in Palestine. But who would think of sending them away? And so he asked that of this guy who's mayor of Jerusalem, asking, hey, what about the Palestinians that you plan on displacing? And his response was saying, who could think of spiriting them away, even though he himself in his diary is thinking about it. So, you know, that's the guy who Jordan Peterson wanted to start their talk with, and who BB said was their Moses. So,
yeah. Oh man. I mean, it's, it never ends, does it, Matt?
No. And I mean, it's funny how they didn't even try. Yeah. We were calling this when Michael was around, like the IDW will never have somebody who will take be critical of Israel. And it just, you know, it's the consistent thing. And, you know, I look forward to whatever Barry Weiss is working on with Elon Musk documents. But I don't know.
Yeah, pretty exciting stuff there, too.
Just the great discourse around this
free
issue.
Free speech lover Barry Weiss. Yeah. Yeah, well, we're actually long overdue for another Palestine episode, so we should try to put that in the bank soon too, because it's not getting good, folks. Unfortunately, it's like looking.
No, I mean, just to summarize the rest of that talk, it's all talking about, hey, look, we have all these partners now that do want peace. BB basically said, like, there's a small section of these holdouts, but look at me going across the Middle East signing all these peace deals, and yeah, it's. I don't know how to project that, but it doesn't seem good.
But actually, if we want to be positive for a second, Matt,
yeah,
I know you've been glued to your seat watching every kick of the World Cup in Qatar. Oh, yeah. But one thing that has been really notable, and I'm not the first person to say this, has been like the outpouring of support for Palestinian people. And Morocco beat Spain today. I don't know if you saw that, which was a huge upset and really beautiful moment in sports. And they run over to celebrate, which is arguably like one of the greatest achievements in the history of that, you know, soccer team. And what flag were they waving?
Oh, yeah.
Palestinian flag. You know what I mean? And, yeah. You know, it's not just that. I mean, it's like it's been throughout the tournament. It's like
I've seen a lot of those. Yeah. When, you know, Israeli reporters try to interview anybody.
Anybody, you know, and even that, like, you know, which is not saying it's wrong, you know, antagonistic, just like just generally like seeing there are cameras and there are people here and we're going to show solidarity and support with our brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. It's been really beautiful.
Yeah.
Funniest arc of all of that has been the English dudes. I don't know if you've seen those.
I did see those guys. Yeah.
Many, not just, you know, one isolated one, but many pint men, as I like to call them, you know, the English equivalent of a good old boy, you know, getting stoked saying it's coming home, which is their chant, you know, that the World Cup's going to come back to England, which it's not.
But I know Chrisman predicted it. So,
sorry, what?
Matt Chrisman predicted England was going to win it. So,
oh, I will take second fiddle to him on a few things. I think soccer, I might take a little bit of flex my muscles a little bit on that. But like, no, but like even those guys, like these British guys who are like, it's coming home, and also free Palestine, which is so awesome to see.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's what's funny about the Rashid Khalidi, the series he did with Danny and Derek is, you know, he was himself was like, there's a give and take with this, right? Like, it's true that culturally, it's probably not been this. I mean, at least in my memory, right? But yeah. I'm only fucking 34 years old. And, you know, we also, we talked about that Bernie endorsing Jesse Jackson. And that was a big issue then too. So it's hard to know exactly how to gauge that. But I think you're right that there's something changing. And I mean, it's interesting. Like, I think BB coming to Congress to lobby against Obama and the Iran deal.
Yeah.
I think that really, like, I wonder if that was maybe, I mean, BB himself thinks that was a bit of a turning point. I wonder if he's not.
You know,
right.
I'll tell you that. I thought that was, because I remember that, because I was working at Al Arabiya at that time. It was like a big Arabic and English news site and like in the Arab world. And, I remember that because one, I was annoyed because I was late to work because my bus got stuck behind PB's motorcade. but two, if you don't remember the actual context of that, BB went to Congress. So went around Obama, which is like a huge, you know, faux pas. It's obviously incredibly insulting to not speak with like the head of state of a country. It's supposed to be nation to nation. Instead mm-hmm. goes and speaks to Congress to try to you know, go around Obama. And I thought that with Obama's popularity within the Democratic Party, that was going to be a shift moment in American right. politics. Wrong completely. Because it's always amazing how quickly, how short-term the memory of a lot of these politicians is on these things. Yeah. And like the concentrated, you know, political movements, in U.S. politics to sort of support the apartheid system in Israel are like continue to be really strong. But I think there's been a lot of cracks in popular support for these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, I think that's why BB has to sort of debase himself by talking to a Jordan Peterson to just try to, because the hope here is that like, there's not enough 22 year old boys anymore who are super worked up about Israel. You know what I mean? Right. And they're trying to find a way to like reclaim that, which is why, I mean, like sometimes they do like BB and folks like that, like have a good sense of American culture in the scene as to where they need to be. But I also think that's definitely like a showing of a little bit of weakness.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of grim in the sense, I don't know if you saw Yair Netanyahu try to do Kanye outreach in the middle of Kanye going violently anti-Semitic, and Yair jumps in with his own sort of a form of anti-Semitism, which is to throw Hollywood Jews under the bus. And there are 14 million Jews in the world. Some of us are conservative, some are liberal, some are patriots, and some are globalists. Oh, okay. There are good and bad people in every faith and nationality. I understand you have a problem with a few Jews in Hollywood. What's that guy? I mean, just like, yeah. I don't know. And you see the way like they, like Ben Shapiro's talked about like Jews name only, or Crowder's talking about secular humanists that's happen to have Jewish last name. I don't know what those folks, what's going on.
Well, I mean, that's the thing that's scary, like at a time when, like, you know, anti-Semitism does seem to be on you know, the rise, you know, playing this game like Yair is there, I think is extremely dangerous.
It's crazy.
Very short-sighted.
I mean, it's so, it's insane. I don't know. It's really gross. And you see like all these conservative thinkers trying to like figure out a way, like there's a sliver of truth in what Kanye is saying. And it's like, bro, you're just like,
I mean, are the other ones doing that as much as like the Crowders, you feel from
what other ones? Like, I mean, like Candace is still sort of like there. Crowder, I'm trying to think who else, like Gavin had him on. I mean, it's kind of interesting. I'm not sure the ultimate effect of like basically Tim Pool being too visibly uncomfortable with saying Jews are persecuting you as a race, Kanye, and Gavin McGinnis also being like, I don't know if I just want to say like when we were growing up Hitler was cool. Like it's weird. I don't know what the impact of this moment is. I don't know. And like, I don't know, are you familiar with Aiden Ross?
No, who's that?
He's this Twitch stream kid, does a lot of like hip hop related drama reaction. But he was going to have Kanye on. And like, I guess like Hassan, you know, is in contact with him. It's just, it's very strange, all this stuff that's going on right now with that stuff. And just to have the full court press by BB on Jordan Peterson with like, yeah, there was. There and the people that were there didn't build shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, man, weak stuff. I know we got some calls and discords, but I'm gonna take a second, if you don't mind, Matt, to educate some folks, because a couple of them are, at least I've seen from some of the IMs we've gotten. Mm-hmm. Very interested in somebody we've actually featured on this program, none other than Trump's favorite author, Nick Adams, who's an alpha male, if you're not familiar. Just be very clear, guy's an odious right winger, but has been on a pretty funny bit, I will say, lately about Hooters, in particular, is the stuff that I like the most. He's been spending like the past like month and a half, like just tweeting shit like this out every day. Hooters with the boys, Bibles in hands, Fortnite controllers in the trash. They hate this. He also, the thing is, whenever you go back to his page, I remember why I hate this guy so much, because he's a nasty little right winger.
It's funny how he talks too.
But the funny posts are funny to me. He doctored a picture of himself as Times Alpha Male of the Year. And he's been fighting to create more and more alpha males in this country, which seems to be having horrible takes on sports, just like dead wrong takes on sports, and going to Hooters and eating a lot. I'm sure not just the liver, like our boy, the Liver King as well. But yeah, I mean, do we want to get to some of these calls? I think it's just going to come up a little bit later, so we can have that prepared for it. I will say, like, you know, sometimes people get so worked up about these things. It's like, look,
we all know what he's doing. He's like posting like an idiot right now to grow his follower base, and he's just gonna tweet out boring ass bait. You know, boring ass shit about like The View and stuff like that. But I will say it's very fucking funny to just be tweeting all the time about Hooters like that.
No, what's funny is like, look, that position is going to be filled. Yeah. And it's funny for somebody so like ludicrous to do it.
This boy.
Yeah. Like, and it's not nothing against Australians, but it's just a funny.
Well, this is an anti-Australian podcast, I thought.
Well, fair enough, but it's a funny place objectively for like it's just, you know, it's the other side of the world. There's some familiarity because both were British colonies. Very funny. Lebetta James, I missed that. Okay, so yeah, incredible 40 plus
Los Angeles. Come on, you know, man. That's good.
I grew up being a Laker fan, and I've never seen that before. So I gotta say.
I mean, I will say, you know, if you don't got the full thing sometimes, like, you know, when you can't get the real thing, sometimes the substitute will do. I do miss Trump. Trump's not going to post on Twitter, I think, for a good while. You know why?
Yes. It's
because Trump is undoubtedly, like, one of the greatest posters of all time. I think it's just undeniable, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First, what's good about Trump? Trump's good because he sees something, he gets worked up, and he just like reacts really quickly to it, right? This is not a planned operation. Your first tweet, you know, Trump's got the shakes about this. You know, he's lining up, he has to be at the free throw line with the game on the line kind of thing. He doesn't want to take the shot. And we're not going to see him do
it. You think that's why?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think so. I think it's contractual.
Oh, you think he has a contract?
I think the second that they are able to like get full value for Truth Social, which they're not going to be able to do if he's not exclusive to Truth Social.
That's true.
I think the second that they're able to like flip that and he doesn't have like a you have to stay exclusive to us, the second he's able to, I think he's back with like Rosie O'Donnell's a fat bitch, and that's just going to be his first tweet. Like look, he could be, but I think he's a true poster, and I think he's ready to come back.
That's probably a smarter take than mine, but I will say I can never imagine a Trump tweet in the first place. I just can't. The only good Trump tweet could be something like, I'm back, right? Like, that's a good one.
He's got to take a shot at somebody, though, too. He's got to bully somebody.
I mean, that's what I want. Trump to come back and one of my favorite Trump of all time is the Vanity Fair one. I can't remember who the name of the guy, Carter is his last name. He's like, Carter's parties are no longer hot. Remember that one?
Something like Stefano.
I want one of those. Like that's also a really good comeback. It's just like getting worked up. Or who's the boy from Twilight?
Oh yeah.
What's his name? Is Edward his Twilight name? I can't remember his real name.
I can't remember what's
everyone knows Twilight thing. Right. Kristen Stewart, right? Or is it Kirsten Stewart?
Yeah. And Robert Pattinson. That's right.
Robert Pattinson cheated on him. And Trump was like very involved. He's like, don't take her back, Robert. She'll do it again. Like, I'd like that as a Trump return tweet too.
Trump is a polymath. He's as interested in like exchange rates as he is in, you know, which of the Twilight stars are fucking each other.
Oh man. Well, did you want to start with the Discord or should we go to calls first?
I'll do one call here quick. This call
heads up. Got a double from Dylan in Australia.
Okay, well, that's very typical Dylan. I will
they're not sending their best.
What's
except
going
for
on?
Matthew Leckie. We love.
Matthew Leckie, that's a great Oscar.
I was going for Australia after the US got knocked out, because I will say like Australia is another country that I like in the absence of the US I usually cheer for in the World Cup, because they're like us where it's like soccer's not the biggest sport. They got blokes on the team. I'm a bloke stan. But they disappointed us well. So we're Australia, you're in the doghouse.
And I think I'm going to try to play this. I think it might be, it was a little bit fuzzy, but we'll give it a shot here.
What's up, fellas? Easter here. I have three quick things to cover that pertains to recent content of yours. Well, with the exception of the first, I first need to apologize quickly to Matt for a call that I placed on MR a few weeks ago. I haven't been able to get through on MR, you know, to make this apology. So I hope Matt will share it with the rest of the Thursday crew. But either way, looking back, my call was rather trivial. You know, so my apologies. And, you know, the lesson for anybody listening is that we should always sleep on things before taking action, especially when we are emotional. Like, now on to more pertinent subject matter. A few weeks ago, you touched on, you know, police violence and their lack of empathy, their abuse of citizens. And I'm pretty sure you had a caller, you know, raise this concern as well. Long ago, you know, before sites like CopWatch were, you know, scrubbed from the internet, I read a report stating that, you know, police departments across the nation have moved to hiring profit fees where they purposely hire people who score low on empathy. You know, this, of course, would make for a huge story, you know, in the aftermath of BLM. I have not been able to find the original post or anything similar, because they did, you know, scrub CopWatch and continue to do so. As I speak, all of their links are broken, but they say, you know, once posted, things live forever on the internet. I don't know how to find scrub material, but maybe you can. I don't know, shot in the dark. With CopWatch specifically, it appears that they're playing whack-a-mole. CopWatch will post their, you know, database, and before too long the material is removed, but I have yet to find any of their links working. Final topic, and it's brief. I am considering establishing a DSA chapter where I live. No one has stepped up to the plate, so maybe I should. I have yet to contact DSA headquarters because I, you know, want to stand on more solid ground. Do you know of any resources that I can utilize as a first timer? You know, I've organized before, but I've never been the organizer, and, you know, I would be building this from the ground up. You know, the resource could be a book, pamphlet, video, or a series thereof. Anything, if you can think of anything, please let me know. And thank you all for your hard work. Solidarity.
So first thing, don't beat yourself up over bad calls the majority part. It's definitely not the first time that's happened, and it's not going to be the last. And everybody, I don't recall which your call was, so, you know, you're cool. Second thing, there should be a way to find that. I mean, I'm seeing one story from ABC News, September 2000, court okays barring high IQs for cops. Now, I'm not a fan of IQ generally, but like, I feel like that's this type of story, so you can probably find it if it's still out there, but I don't quite know. I haven't been able to find that one just in my immediate search on Google there, but I mean, there's probably even more up-to-date stuff on that sort of question that's been published in the last 5-10 years or so. And then the third point, resource on, well, specific to organizing what?
To try to organize a DSA chapter in their town. And, you know, on that, like, I understand the trepidation of saying, you know, I want to like pick up all this kind of knowledge beforehand. But really, like, the best thing you can do is to talk. I would suggest finding your closest, like, local chapter and reaching out to them. And, like, those people will be able to give you the best resources because they've done it at some point or another. And, you know, like, these things are always a process. We're always all learning together. And, you know, I mean, understanding that, like, no one's expecting you to already know and to be like, you know, a superhuman political strategist and organizer, knowing that like that's the whole point in sharing resources is that so you don't have to beforehand, you know, be a self-made expert. I mean, doing these things collectively is always better. And those, you know, groups would be best suited to sort of point you in the right direction to start thinking about, you know, strategically what is in front of you.
Yeah. You should do some discords.
Yeah, sounds good. First question is from Seb Gorka's Back Pain. It says, who has the better Twitter account in your opinion, Occupy Democrats or Nick Adams, the alpha male?
Hey, Occupy Democrats put in some good work on the JFK assassination. it is funny. I'm seeing it's interesting to watch a lot of the conspiracy sort of hawk folks that I follow on Twitter sort of reckon with the fact that it's becoming a normie dem thing to be like, oh yeah, Kennedy was whacked. And yeah. You know why that is. It's for the same reason like Chomsky was never enthusiastic about it, which is that there's a whole Kennedy myth and this idea that Kennedy would have been meaningful different. And like, I think like, I actually think these circles are squared when you get into the Kennedy assassination lore, because like, while it is true that JFK, for instance, ran on, were the missile gap, for instance.
Yeah.
Fucking Richard Nixon was planning Bay of Pigs. He was vice president. Eisenhower had a heart attack. He was sidelined for the last part of his administration. Nixon thought he was going to walk into office. Remember, that election was very contested. And Nixon thought he was going to walk into office. And Nixon would have okayed the invasion, ground invasion of at Bay of Pigs, just to name one of the reasons that I think Kennedy would have been whacked. But yeah, I mean, actually, we're going to try to get a guest, because I know there's some people who are a little bit resistant to the Kennedy assassination stuff. But I especially like with the revelations today that sort of confirm, and I haven't read it yet, but from what I can see, confirm what was suspected, which is that when Oswald's like running around saying like, I'm here for like fair play for Cuba. Let me get on a right-wing radio station to talk about how much of a communist I am. He's fucking CIA. Like, and he was spooked up, and like he was at the airbase at Sugi Airbase in Japan that the U-2 bomber was flying out of. This isn't just some guy. And so like all the JFK assassination stuff, which is like, actually he was a pervert, or he was this kind of fucked up guy that wanted to be famous. It's like, yeah, you know what? He was also at the airbase where the U-2 spy plane was flying out of. And he was also like, you know, at all these different places that say, this guy is an intelligence asset. And, you know, that's just out now. And I guess we can deal with it. As Abigail Spanberger, what happened with her again? A CIA agent at the Democratic Party? Could you believe it? Let's see. What is this? Spanberger beats Cartwright to be the House Dem battleground leadership representative. So Democrats not only breaking strikes, but having CIA agents who killed Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
For Christ's sake, Occupy Dems. Let's get on this. Let's get Spanberger out of office. I want to figure out how to harness this energy.
I wonder if I might have disappointed you, Matt. I was at a bar around here a few days ago, and the drunkest guy in the place, who is like one of those drunk guys who is like alone or in a small group and like felt the need to like move from table to table to try to make some buddies, came up to me and told me that his daddy was the accountant at the building where the shots were fired at Kennedy as his opener. And maybe there's some questions I need to ask, because he might have been haunted something. But so yeah. I'm sorry, everybody, for failing and being able to ascertain the truth of what happened on that fateful day.
You know what's going to be annoying, though, is that everyone's that was basically denying that there's any sort of intelligence connection to Oswald is going to be like, actually, that's just a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just say, if this many motherfucking people have all these spy connections, that's interesting in and of itself. And that goes to illustrate a type of like surveillance and intelligence apparatus that is way too big. And I would just say, like, a month after Kennedy got his brains blown out, Harry Truman is like, we need to look into maybe getting rid of this whole covert operations clandestine shit, because it might have grown a little bit too big for its britches. But anyway, I'm a little bit defensive.
And also, before we get to the next one, just a news update. It seems like Warnock won in the state of Georgia by about what's looking like a percentage point at best. So
that's it?
50.8% to 49.2% with 5%. Of the votes still left to count, but they've called it.
Interesting.
So there you go. Next up, Joe Snuffy says, I'm perpetually amazed that anyone could believe that the New York Times is a left institution. Honestly, I think that it's just a symptom of how most of our population doesn't read the New York Times. And so they never actually test the presumption. They just presume that someone who told them that the New York Times is left leaning must have actually read it. I mean, I hear you in the sense of, like, the Musks accusing these kind of things, but, like, I think what most people mean by that is liberal, and I think that it's undoubtable that that's the political persuasion of the vast majority of people at that publication, if that's fair to say, which is not the same as the left.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely not. That's the difference. And there can be a lot of good liberals and then a lot of liberals that are, like, lying for capitalism. I mean, the New York Times itself said we're a capitalist paper.
Oh, yeah.
They said that in like 2016 or something like that.
Joe also says, in Rhode Island, we don't have referendums at the state level, so we don't even have the luxury of falling into those traps. I mean, same here. The Liver King did actually publicly apologize for lying about his steroid use once he was caught, which is rare. But he asserted that he only did it to become a role model for insecure and beaten down young men. It's the same narrative Jordan Peterson uses, and obviously the $40 million a year he was making selling his supplements had nothing to do. God, he was making that much money on who's buying these fucking supplements? That we got to get in on that shit, dude. I didn't realize that buying that shit. Dude, that's so crazy to me. The fuck?
Yeah, new nootropics or something like that.
Oh my God. I think he was like grounding up what's like liver or something like that. Or he was saying he was selling like the things that are in liver to people. When again, I thought your whole thing was that you got to eat it raw, baby. And his steroid regimen is insane. He's taking like 5 or 6 times what's considered to be safe at 44. That's super dangerous. Yeah. Doesn't surprise me too much. Dave from Jamaica adds anti-Semitism, the socialism of fools. I mean, I won't even call it socialism. Klandis has been very silent when it comes to the defense of Yidolf, and Trump won't tweet till Elon pays him.
Klandis has spoken. She said that it's cool to disagree with your boss, and the Daily Wire has a wide range of feelings about things. For instance, Ben Shapiro thought the vaccine was good, and she doesn't vaccinate her kids for anything. She said that. And I would just say it's good that you have a diversity of viewpoints on the right. That gets my attention. Be more interesting if you put those in conflict and had a conversation about like Ben's support of Zelensky or whatever the fuck, or vaccines, or Kanye West and whether or not he's anti-Semitic, if you still want to argue that. Argue it. Don't just like have these disagreements. And like Ben Shapiro is wrong for putting you on blast on Twitter. But it's also not right to like do it privately. Like, you go have a fucking conversation.
Yeah. Totally. And that's as for now, that's it for our Discord questions. Unless, let me see. I did want to, oh yeah, there's some in here. Just give me 1 second. We're going to go a little bit behind the scenes, folks, because people send me barbecue shots that does go up on the big screen. Though I will say, Dave, friend to friend, I know it's good, but you got to, when you take these pics, you gotta get the lighting right. But we got some jerk chicken from our friend Dave from Jamaica.
Do that.
Going on down there. And I'd love to try to actually, Dave, if you're listening, I do. What's the best Scotch bonnet sauce? I've been trying to, I'm a big Scotch bonnet fan, and I've been buying some from my grocery store that says it's from Jamaica. I can't remember the brand off the top of my head right now, but I was curious if it's one of those things that, like, you know, gets shipped off to other countries versus the thing that the good folks at home eat. Like, have you been to Italy before, Matt?
Never, nope.
You know Peroni, the beer?
Mm-hmm.
The Peroni they have in Italy is very different. And they sell the one that you have at the bar, but it's called, like, Peroni Premier or Peroni International or something like that. It was very much made for, like, an international audience. It's a much darker, not like a stout or anything like that, but more like a nice kind of amber ale kind of thing, like the Italian Peroni. And I don't know, it's just one of those things where you realize it's like some of these products that get sort of shipped out from other countries, you know, they mess around with them a little bit to fit different markets.
Yeah, I forget what the there's some beer I had in Bruges. And I thought it was like, and they gave me a big long story. They had like the story about it. Like, this has been here for the Middle Ages and stuff like that. I was like, oh crap. Yeah. Let's get this. And like, take pictures with it with your buds. And I come back and I see it in like the grocery store. It's like, it's like Duvel, I think it was, or something like that.
Man, I wish I could have clipped you saying a few, like a couple months back on the show, that you don't like beer with a lot of flavor. It's a great Matt Leck quote.
That's true. Give me the pills now, please.
Also, here we go. Here are some of the ones we missed. Subgorka's back pain. It's acclaimed actor Robert Pattinson from such films as Lighthouse and Good Time, who Trump was fearlessly defending. Congressional baseball fan says, first off, shout out to Ben Case at my alma mater. We aren't all nuts here in Arizona. Now, on the subject of Australia, Nick Adams, I think, is Australia's payback for King O'Malley, who is an American con artist that immigrated to Australia, where he served in Parliament and as Home Minister. He is known for his work/corruption surrounding the establishment of Canberra as capital of Australia. When he was in the United States, he left behind a trail of failed ventures, including once founding a Native American-sounding church in Texas in order to get a land grant. Definitely entertaining to read up on him.
God. Yeah. Like, every capital in, like, the Western world is, like, some sort of corrupt scheme. Like, I know, like, North Dakota, there's, like, a fight between Bismarck and Yankton, South Dakota, and things like that. And it's always, you know, it's at least at that point, it was Gilded Age sort of corruption.
Was the beer your thing of Hoegaarden? MDR's asking.
No, it was Duvel, I'm pretty sure. I don't like
I've seen those around, yeah.
Hoegaarden's not great, though. I don't like Hoegaarden.
Yeah, actually, I'd like to know more from our friends in Australia about weird Americans who come there, because I hadn't even thought about that, but I'm sure we've probably sent our fair share of weirdos to y'all's land. Dave says, I tend to make my own sauce, but I'm currently looking for good all-in-one spicy jerk sauce. I'll send you a pic once it's finished, once I find one that is spicy enough. Hell yeah. There's a good, one thing I was nervous about leaving New York for, other than being able to see Matt's beautiful face on the regular, was like losing out on Jamaican food, because I got really into that. And there's a really good jerk marinade that I was able to get up there that I've been able to find at Central Market here, which makes me really happy. Joe says, what are your thoughts on the immediate shift in corporate media coverage of the rail strike after Biden and the Dems broke the strike? My take is that after demanding Biden crush the workers for weeks, the feigned humanity is just meant to get all the unions to focus their anger and efforts against Biden to take pressure off of his corporate string pullers. They seem very determined to ensure a very specific lesson is learned from this. Let me read that again.
I guess the idea, I don't know. They're less interested in like, they're trying to look empathetic because people are pissed. I think.
Yeah.
I don't think. I don't know. I guess maybe I'm just a little bit too sensitive to the idea that Biden doesn't have agency here.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
I think this is just. This is just Biden, you know, playing his role as the rail companies knew that Biden was going to do this. That's why they held down right. These negotiations for so long. It's and the media's role in it. I think it's to protect an image of Joe Biden from the general public and make it seem like somebody else is behind it. I mean, that's the thing that drives me the most fucking crazy is when you hear people acting like it was some act of like the push just got sort of placed. Yeah. On the feet of Congress instead of being a direct order request for the President of the United States of America. You're not going to get too many crocodile tears from me about Joe Biden being in, you know, being in a hard place. All right. I think we can be ready for some calls if you're good for that, Matt.
All right. Here's Joe Snuffy.
Hey, everybody. It's Joe Snuffy. All right, so right before I was about to make the call for tonight, I got a bunch of messages from my older brother and have some really cool news. So all the way back in like September, he was telling me about he's a doctor at one of the two hospitals in Minnesota where there's a huge nursing strike that's been going on for a while. So back in September, he was telling me the details that they were initially authorizing the strike. And he just reached out to me to let me know that the nurses have won, at least at one of the two hospitals. So they just authorized a second 20-day strike, after doing that, the hospital caved. They dropped the demand for having the staff have like a multi-tier pay system for new and old employees. That got dropped. It's going to be a 17% pay increase over 3 years with 7% of that. In the first year, like it's immediate. The only concession the workers had to make was that new hires are going to get a pool of PTO instead of separate vacation and sick time leave pools. So like the total number of days is less, but as long as they don't get sick, they get more time off in the year. Union reps are unanimously recommending ratification, but the hospital across the town has not actually changed anything, and the nurses at that one just authorized a indefinite strike, and literally all of their employees essentially are on strike and have been for a while. There was good thing on this is that the union members stuck together. There were efforts on the part of the hospital administration to set the workers against each other. They offered the 10-year experienced nurses 13% raises, and 20-year nurses 3%. Raises, which I mean, during an ongoing negotiation, it's illegal, but they obviously did it anyway. Thankfully, everybody turned around and they ended up refusing. They also won one of the big issues that led to this crisis is that the hospital has been routinely understaffing chronically, and they actually ended up winning more than they were initially demanding. Originally, their union was just demanding like a fixed ratio of staffing for each unit. Instead, the workers are now going to be directly involved and largely speaking have control over their staffing by unit and department, which according to my brother is like the ideal and like smartest way to make this kind of stuff work. So overall, great news. It's fucking awesome to hear, especially because you know this is the culmination of about 3-4 months worth of struggle. So, and I hope that the nurses of the second hospital also win. Everybody have a good night.
Thanks for the update, Joe. It reminds me, you knew this out of the Minnesota Reformer this morning. Nurses reached deals with Twin Cities and Duluth area hospitals in Minnesota. There's 15,000 nurses that were planned to walk off at 15 hospitals for the second time in recent months. They'll receive an 18% wage increase. Good news.
Yeah.
I'd like to see more of that.
No, absolutely. That's wonderful news.
Got another call here. Who did you say we had? We had
doubles from Dylan in Australia.
Okay, cool.
I don't know what the international code for that country is.
Okay, yeah, that's Jules again. Sorry.
Okay, 61 is Australia.
Gotcha.
Yo, what's up, guys? It's Jay from Queens. I just wanted to call in quickly and say happy birthday, super producer Matt Leck. Thank you. I can't remember if it's your 32nd or 33rd, but I hope you had a relaxing day to yourself. You guys work super hard. Just wanted to call in and say love you guys. Love the work that you do. And, sorry I can't stick around for too long and ask a serious question this week. I'm in crunch time for finals. But, yeah. Wishing you guys a great episode. And, take care. I'll see you at the New York Live Show.
Oh, hell yeah.
Peace.
It's funny you mentioned finals because I tell my girlfriend, like, I still have finals week stress associated with my birthday, and I've been out.
Oh, man, you're right. That's terrible, dude.
I've been out of school for like 10. It's basically gone now, but like, it's always like, it's my birthday. It's dark outside and it's finals. Like, that's, God.
But did it mess with your 21st?
I think I was lucky and had like a Friday or Saturday 21st.
Oh, that's really nice at least.
Yeah.
I mean, and finals are so awful for many reasons, but particularly that like judging your performance and your course load by creating this insanity of like 3-4 days of like cramming and overwork. I don't know. It's just a really bad way to sort of mark whether or not like you've actually like understood and reflected with and familiarized yourself with the material on a course.
No, I've become very cynical. Like all this stuff, it's meant to like weed people out who materially just like, I hear people like that are, about women who are like, they have kids and trying to go back to nursing school. And like there's like all this stuff going on with like COVID. So your classes are jumbled around. Well, if you have kids, it's easier for me, like a dumbass that didn't have any responsibility at all. If you have kids or these other responsibilities, like you're fucked.
It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. And like, just to gripe for a second, I took this course at school, Native American Politics, which I was so excited to take. But the professor for it was a wild ass man who was just adjunct guy, government contractor, drove a Porsche, right?
Hell yeah.
And just like taught like one course at my school a year. And he had a lot of like extracurricular things, like we're going to go to the Native American Museum or we're going to go visit the Pamunkey lands. It wasn't officially recognized at that point as a reservation, you know, which is like great, like, you know, add to your experience kind of stuff. But the way he set it up was all of the tests and all of the essays he failed you on. Like you would get like a 30% on your essay. And he wouldn't even read it. Like he would grade it in front of the class and he'd take about 15 to 30 seconds on everybody's essay, right? And the questions on the test were literally stuff like, what is quoted on page 61 of this book? Like I'm not even making that up, like just straight, you know, just impossible questions so that you would fail. And then to pass the class, you had to do the extra credit bullshit with him.
Yeah.
Which was just like a really nasty way to set up a course because then you had to like your weekends or whatever. Anyways, the last thing of the semester for that during finals week, we watched Dances with Wolves
the Kevin Costner movie. Not in class, in the evening during finals week. And it was like, it could give you plus like 50% of your final grade by like attending that. Right.
That's a long ass movie too.
It's a long ass movie, Bubba. So like I had to sit there and like make this decision. It's like, you have like, I had philosophy papers to finish and all this stuff. And just like, all right, from like 7 to 11, I'm going to go fucking watch a Kevin Costner movie instead of working on my other stuff to placate this guy. Anyway,
Jesus. Yeah,
they should definitely, I let that guy go. But my fear would be that there wouldn't be any Native American politics course there anymore. If they
yeah, Dances with Wolves is the best you can get. That is bleak.
Anyway, very weird situation. So best of luck to everybody going through their shit this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we got another one from Jay here.
Hey guys, it's Jay from Queens again. I realize I dropped the ball and I completely missed an opportunity to say Leck is best. You know, like, what's the point of being a fan with a really terrible sense of humor if you can't make dad puns occasionally when they present themselves? Anyway, I actually do have to go now.
Yeah, Jay, get back and do your finals, buddy. Yeah, get back to that homework. Procrastinating on our voicemail line. So we do the second one. Okay.
For Dylan, yeah.
Yeah. Probably this one here.
Hey, Matt and David. This is Dylan from Australia. Just wanted to let you know some local news. In Victoria, where we have the longest lockdown in the world outside of China, we re-elected our Premier, Dictator Dan, as he's known in the right-wing media. He achieved the exact same margin against the exact same opposition leader who went against him last time. And, yeah, pretty exciting stuff. Also, the Greens Party here in Victoria has less seats in the upper house, which is our Senate, than the Legalized Weed Party. So there's our preference system, you know, those preference whispers that David and I previously told David about. Anyways, also we saw, you know, cheating by the typical stealing of things that happens in the Americas, whether it be the US election or the World Cup. Argentina obviously stole victory from Australia. Very unfortunate. I also watched that entire Alex Jones Kanye interview. Very, very, like, he's become a full-blown Christian nationalist.
Yep.
Because he's lost mm-hmm. his wife.
Yeah,
it seems to me. And it's kind of sad. And I don't know, like, College Dropout is still a good album. anyways, let's hear it for the Aggies. Let's hear it for basketball as a sport, which Matthew enjoys watching a game.
Oh, yeah, bro.
And, yeah, take care.
Thank you, Dylan.
I'm sorry about the Socceroos. I tried to, you know, inspire them a bit. I don't think I did a good job.
Kowalski from Nebraska, next on the hotline.
Howdy, Matt and David. It is Kowalski from Nebraska. Matt, happy birthday. I hope my gift for you and the rest of the office arrived okay today. If not, do check the mail in the morning. And if it's not there, reach out to me in some fashion, because that would be disappointing.
Kowalski, was it cupcakes? Because there were cupcakes there, but I didn't check the – I was late in the work today. The day after my birthday. So, but if those were the gift, then yes. If not, then no.
Since it said it was delivered. Speaking of gifts, I was curious if you guys had came up with a plan.
Thank you for the cupcakes, Kowalski.
Plan with those two Left Reckoning sports balls I've got.
Oh,
give them away as like
gifts
to your favorite listeners. I mean, you know, obviously not myself, but because you know, I've already got them. I'm joking. I know I ain't the favorite. Too many John Brown references. You don't want the NSA to think that you're associated with me all too much. But, yeah, that would be about it. Go Warnock. It's looking like it's pretty close right now. But fingers crossed, maybe they can do something with a larger majority. Don't know what that would be, but it's always nice to give the Republicans a little bit of knife twist between the rib cages. All righty. Talk to you later.
Matt, we are fucking up with our one, with Kowalski's generous offer for those. And two, we forgot to mention again that we're going to be doing a live show in New York City.
God damn it.
And people should definitely come out and see us and our friends, Jason Miles, Ben Burgess, your boy Sam Cedar, Emma Vigeland, and Bhaskar Sankara in New
York.
Buy
tickets if you want to get there, folks. These are going to sell for us.
We've been hearing they've been selling pretty quick, so definitely try to snag them. But what we should do with the balls is we were going to announce – we'll do an official announce. This is the soft launch, but you can get a head start in the competition, folks. If anyone wants to submit a poster or some kind of graphic for us to spread on social media to spread awareness of this big event, we'll do another contest like we did last time, and winners will get some of these sports balls. It just doesn't sound very enticing, but some of these branded athletic equipment from Kowalski, and obviously some merch of your choice as well. If you have any ideas for that, if you have something ready already, you can email us at leftreckoning @gmail.com with it, and we'll announce it in the future. But I think that's the best way to find a home for these things.
Yeah, I got to bring my ball home. I have it in my at work. I think Emma posted a picture of us, and the problem is, like, if I walk past a hoop, I'm going to want to like throw it through at least once. It has this just nice, logo on there, and I don't want to ruin it, but I want to play with it. I want to chuck it out of rim. And I believe one final, I'll refresh, make sure there's not any latecomers, but voicemail here.
Hey guys, Left Reckoning Crew Day from Jamaica here. All right. So let me get through the points nice and quickly. So, you guys were talking about the Palestine-Israeli struggle. Another reason why former billionaire narcissist, I really don't like Kanye because of how he his anti-Semitism clouds the thing, because then he was using Zionist in his interview, and I know that that's going the right wing in Israel is going to have a field day with that one. I guess a quick aside on that, when it comes to mental illness, down in Jamaica, we have lots of folks who are mentally ill. And while I do agree Kanye has mental illness struggles, I think it's more a case of his mental illness reduces his ability to filter his thoughts, right? But I have a funny feeling he was pretty anti-Semitic for a very, very, very long time. But anyway, off of...
I think there is certain evidence that you could look back in retrospect. There's a little bit of a fixation there, but, you know, who knows?
Kanye, and on to football. While I do like those British fans supporting Palestine, which is great, I agree with David on that one. I'm not seeing it. But if I'm willing to put my head on the block, I will say that France is looking really good. Mbappe, Giroud, I think they might actually repeat. I have that feeling, but we'll see when England versus...
Does that happen? Has there been repeat World Cup winners?
It's definitely rare. I'll look that up. I'm curious.
Yeah.
France. Not that I can think of, because I mean, in modern history, it's actually been the opposite, where World Cup winners sometimes struggle to get out of their group
the next
initially. Let me see.
Interesting.
What is telling me? I do like French football, but you know, that's just me.
So only time has ever happened. Sorry. Only time has ever happened is 1934 and 1938, Italy. But then got to take advantage of that during World War II. There were a few years where they weren't playing. And then Brazil, 1958, 1962. So it's been a long time.
Damn. Let me make sure I didn't cut off.
As left reckoning crew, Dave from Jamaica here. Let me get through the points nice and quickly.
Go quick, because we're
talking about the Palestine, Israeli.
But I can't skip ahead, so I just want to make sure.
Another reason why former billionaire narcissist, I really don't like Kanye because of how he his anti-Semitism clouds the thing, because then he was using Zionists in his interview, and I know that that's going to the right wing in Israel is going to have a field day with that one. I guess a quick aside on that when it comes to mental illness. Down in Jamaica, we have
lots of people. Actually, I think we heard that whole call.
Sorry, David, if we missed any of it. My bad. I was very earnest about getting to the bottom of this World Cup mystery. There's apparently one more while you're doing that. I'll pull this one up. And Dylan, we're only sharing this because we love you. Dylan says, look at my beautiful Elder Scrolls Online character. I don't know who it is. There we go. There, if you want to look, Matt.
What is that?
His Elder Scrolls Online character. But he has some pertinent news. The Elder Scrolls Online is made by ZeniMax Online Studios, which is part of Bethesda Microsoft. They just became the first Microsoft studio to start a union with majority support. So congrats to them. And Guy in Melbourne, CBD, used to import Dublin Dr. Pepper. Dr. Pepper from Texas until they were sued and aren't allowed to get it imported. So hell yeah for that. I can't remember her name, but we did an interview about union fights in the video game industry. Really interesting because they go through a lot of bullshit.
Well, it's like it's one of these industries where a lot of people get inspired because they want to follow their dreams into something they love. You see this with like the Suns in basketball. You see this in Hollywood all the time, where people are frankly willing to put up with worse because it's a passion. And video game, particularly, you hear about like the crunch and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I wish I could remember. I can look this up here. Before we go, I did find your call, Tommy. We'll play that now, actually, while I look for that interview.
Hello, Left Reckoning. This is Tommy calling from Renton, Washington. First off, I'd like to wish a happy birthday to Mr. Matt Leck, 34 years young. And here's to many more. And with that out of the way, I'd like to talk football for a moment. I take the gravest possible exception to some comments David made on the last podcast regarding the GOAT, Russell Wilson.
Oh,
I must say, as a Seahawks fan, that Russell Wilson is the truth. He brought a ring to the city of Seattle, and before 2013. You couldn't find Seattle on a map. And it was after we blew out the Broncos by wide margin that Google Maps added Seattle to their system. So that's just, I need to push back against that erasure. And secondly, on the topic of football, the only sport in the world and God's greatest gift to mankind, another Seattle football team, the UW Huskies are facing off against the Texas Longhorns December 29 in the Alamo Bowl, which reminds me of that national tragedy. But I've got to say, the Huskies are looking good. I'm expecting a blowout by 150 points.
Okay.
And I know you don't like to make predictions, but I'll lodge my own prediction. Huskies by 200. Okay. And I have a feeling that December 29, the Huskies are going to be eating beef. And that's an Alamo that you'll never be able to forget. So hope you have a good show, Left Reckoning. Looking forward to the
the countdown to LR100.
And
thanks for taking this call, and hope y'all have a good one. All right, take care. Bye-bye.
I appreciate it. I mean, I will say one thing. It's like the thing about the Alamo Bowl, which is like, you know, it's not our bowl. It's just a bowl that's in San Antonio. They call it the Alamo Bowl. But every time Texas plays in it, there's like that added embarrassment. Like you can't. Like
can't
Texas
lose can't the Alamo Bowl. Bowl.
Or I guess that would be historical if they did, right? I
mean, right, yeah. That's why.
But I'll tell you, I mean, I think Texas has this one. The thing that is going to be tough, it hasn't happened yet as far as I know, but Bijan Robinson, which people don't know, Bijan is Persian name for prince. He's not Persian. His mama just looked up names in other languages for prince, but we love our Prince Bijan here. And I'm waiting. I know it's coming any day now. The classic photograph of him in his jersey and thank you Longhorn Nation. Like he's definitely going to declare for the draft.
Right. Yes,
And I think that is going to make that game a little unpredictable for me because he's such a big part of the offense, obviously the greatest running back in college football today. But say 35-14, Quinn Ewers overcomes his bad form of late and shows those boys from the PNW what football looks like.
Damn, so it's the Washington Huskies versus the Longhorns.
Yeah, the 29th. I should get tickets. I've been thinking about it. They're like $80 for bad seats, which is the only thing I would pay for.
Right.
It could be fun.
By the way, I found that interview that was on August 22nd of last year with Emma Kinema.
Yes. Yeah. People should check that out. So, yeah. The one thing, man, that drives me nuts about Patreon is I wish it was easier to search stuff.
That's true.
But, yeah, maybe that's a project for the future. But anyway, folks, appreciate everyone so much. Come see us in New York City, January 21st, January 22nd, with all of our buddies. It's going to be a hell of a time. And if you're interested in making a poster or any kind of thing like that, send us an email. We'll have a contest. We'll send out some merch and some of these balls to folks.
Get some balls.
And we'll be back this weekend with Kuba. I'll be back on Thursday with the Griscom stream, potentially with a guest. We'll see what happens. I might be organizing a couple of things. But as always, appreciate everyone so much. And take care and see you on Thursday.
Peace.